Good evening, everyone. Tim, are you preaching? Okay. Huh? Oh, Mike is, maybe. I don't know. He's going the wrong way. Let's all stand if it's convenient for you. There's a land that is fairer than day. There's a land that is fairer than day. And by faith we can see it afar. For the Father wakes over the way to prepare us a dwelling place there in the sweet by and by. Jesus is all.
Well, amen. Good to see you. We don't have to send out a SOS tonight. Nobody will have to scoot over and make room. We got plenty. Have a note of appreciation here. I need to read to our family at Osage Baptist Church. Thank you all for your thoughts and prayers. Thank you to those that brought food and came to visit. Thank you very much for the tote of food and supplies. We're also so very thankful for the church's donation of 10 Bibles to the Gideons. Thank you very much for all the love and support. Love, Kathy and James and family, the Wheatley family. And our heart still goes out to that family, James, and we want to you know that our prayers are with you. Well, I'm going to finish up tonight, hopefully, on the book of Acts. And we're going to finish with Paul's sea voyage, the storm at sea. And we're going to talk about storms in our own lives and how this compares to storms in our own lives. If you're not going through a storm right now, you either have or you're going to be. It is part of life. So take your Bibles and turn to Acts 27. And let's stand together as we give reverence to the reading of God's precious and holy word. And we're going to start with verse 13 of Acts 27 as this tells the story of the storm. And hopefully we'll be able to relate to many things that the scriptures tell us here in this passage. And when the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, loosing thence, they sailed close to Crete. But not long after, there arose against it a temperous wind called Euroclydon. And when the ship was caught and could not bear up into the wind, we let her drive. And running under a certain island, which is called Claudia, we had much work to come by the boat, which when they had taken up, they used helps and undergirding the ship, and fearing lest they should fall into the quicksand, struck sail, and so were driven. And we being exceedingly tossed with a tempest the next day, they lightened the ship. And the third day we cast out with our own hands the tackling of the ship. And when neither sun nor stars in many days appeared, and no small tempest lay on us, all hope that we should be saved was then taken away. But after long abstinence, Paul stood forth in the midst of them and said, Sirs, you should have hearkened unto me and not have loosed from Crete and to have gained this harm and loss. And now I exhort you to be of good cheer, for there shall be no loss of any man's life among you, but of the ship. For there stood by me this night the angel of God, whose I am and whom I serve, saying, Fear not, Paul, thou must be brought before Caesar. And lo, God hath given thee all them that sail with thee. Wherefore, sirs, be of good cheer, for I believe God, that it shall be even as it was told me. Howbeit, we must be cast upon a certain island. And when the 14th night was come, as we were driven up and down in Adria, about midnight the shipmen deemed that they drew near to some country, and sounded and found it 20 fathoms. And when they had gone a little farther, they sounded again and found it 14 fathoms, or drawing close to land. And then fearing lest we should have fallen upon rocks, they cast four anchors out of the stern and wished for the day. And as the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship when they had let down the boat into the sea under the color as though they would have cast anchors out of the foreship, Paul said to the centurion and to the soldiers, "Except these abide in the ship, you cannot be saved." Then the soldiers cut off the ropes of the boat and let her fall off. And while the day was coming on, Paul besought them all to take meat, saying, "This day is the 14th day that you have tarried and continued fasting, having taken nothing. Wherefore I pray you to take some meat, for this is for your health. For there shall not a hair fall from the head of any of you." And when he had thus spoken, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And when he had broken it, he began to eat. Then were they all of good cheer, and they also took some meat. And we were in all in the ship 260 souls. And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship and cast out the wheat into the sea. You may be seated. That's a long reading, isn't it? So let's look at what this passage says. Those aboard the ship with Paul, he tells us there was 276 altogether. He's being accompanied by two fellow Christians, Aristarchus and Luke. Real friends stay with you even in the storm. And I think that's one of the things that Paul is experiencing here. He's not alone. He has other Christian friends with him. He has at least two with him. Then there's Julius, a centurion. He was in charge of 100 soldiers. And for a Roman soldier to lose a prisoner, it meant his own life. Yet Julius gives Paul great privilege. He tells us back, if you look back in verse 3, that was before we started reading, he's given Paul a lot of liberty. So God's hand's on him. Paul is told farther back in Acts that he's going to go to Rome. He's warned by the prophets that if he goes to Rome, he's going to lose his life. He's going to be bound. But he says, I'm going to do what God's called me to do. And so this is God's calling on his life. So let's look at what this passage says. Number one, you will do your greatest work for the kingdom in stormy circumstances in your life. Are you going through one now? Some of you are. Very stormy. Some of you have been through storms. Some of you are going to go through storms in the future. Maybe in the near future. But you're going to do your greatest work for the Lord in the midst of that storm. You know, when things are going smooth, folks are not looking at our life to see how we're going to respond in smooth water. They're looking at our life to see how we're going to respond in rough water. They're looking at the church during times of trouble, during the times of COVID, to see how the church is going to respond to troubled times, and how you and I are going to respond. Had it not been for the storm in Mark 4, the disciples would not have witnessed Jesus' control over the storm. You remember that, right? He's asleep on a pillow at the back of the ship in the midst of a storm. You get that picture? I love to think about that picture. And the disciples are sure they're going to die. And they ask Jesus, "Do you not care if we die?" Jesus asked them about their faith. It doesn't take faith when we're on smooth water. It doesn't take faith when everything is going well and the family's well and the bills are being paid and the job is secure and all things are well. But it takes faith in the midst of the storm. They were able to witness Jesus say to the storm, "Peace be still." You get that? I don't know what the name of the song is, but I remember hearing Delaine McCoy sing it here years ago, that the wind whispered to the waves, "That's him. That's him." And I'm telling you, in the midst of the storm of our life, he is present. "I'll never leave you nor forsake you," he said. And during some of the, no matter how tough the storm is, the Lord is there and he will not lay. And by the way, he's in charge. And he may not respond the way that we think that he should. He may not answer our prayer in the way that we think that he should answer the prayer. We may be praying for healing. We may be praying that we would be helped financially. We may be praying that our job would be different some way. He's going to answer it in the way that is right. Lyle used to say that he had three ways that he answered prayers. Sometimes he said no, sometimes he said yes, and sometimes he said wait a while. So there's sometimes that we have to wait a while before that prayer is answered. Secondly, storms bring out the leader in us. When you read this story from the front to the back, the ship owner and the centurion are the ones who are in charge. They're making all the decisions. But when the wind and when the storm really comes, God's man is the leader. And as we read through this, we discover, especially they had gone 14 days without anything to eat. I'm terrible at a diet. I need two or three to keep fed. I can't imagine 14 days, can you? In the sea and rough, tough times, and also being without anything to eat. Not only does it bring out the leader in us, but Paul knew that the character of a leader is being a servant. So as we read this passage, we see Paul being a servant to the others that are on the ship. He's serving everyone. He's telling them, "Now let's take food." And you see all these, it must have been a huge ship. Because what did I say? How many? 276 folks that were on this ship. Besides, they were carrying a cargo of wheat and other things, perhaps. It was a big ship. And you see all these folks gathered around, and Paul is asking the blessing on the food. In Matthew 20 and verse 28, Jesus said, "The Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister." In 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 5, Paul says, "Who is Paul? And who is Apollos?" They're talking about who baptized him here. But he said, "Ministers." People that minister to other people. Not the one that is in charge, but the one that is ministering to other people. Most of the time, we call our pastor the minister. Well, that's what he ought to be. That's what he ought to be. He ought to be a servant, or he shouldn't be in the business. A servant leader will have the best interest at heart of those around. And I don't take this wrong, because I think that there's different circumstances call for different answers. But most of the time, the one who wants to be in charge doesn't need to be in charge. Now, does that mean when somebody comes and says, I'd like to set the tables up, go ahead. I think that different situations call for different things. But sometimes folks want to be in charge just to be in charge, to be the boss, to be in charge. The lady came into the pastor's office all steamed up over something. And she said, I would like to speak to someone in this place with a little authority. And he said, well, I have as little as anybody I know of, so go ahead and talk to me. I don't know how long ago it was, maybe it's been months ago, but my sister cleans the church. But if there's something you see that you don't like about it, don't come and talk to me about it. I've talked to the church about that before they hired her, that I wasn't going to be in charge of her. But she needed a vacuum cleaner. And she said the vacuum cleaners wore out. And Greg says they don't ever throw any of the old ones away. And I said, well, go get whatever you want, and we'll pay for it. Church will pay for it. I said, matter of fact, get two. And you can leave one of them upstairs, one of them downstairs. You won't have to carry them up and down steps. Okay. Well, the next week when she came to clean, she brought this new vacuum cleaner in to show me what she had bought. And I wasn't very interested in it. I was trying to show some interest. But anyway, I said, so you bought two of them. No, she said, I didn't buy two. She said, I can carry this up and down the steps. I said, I told you to buy two. She said, I know you said to buy two, but I just couldn't hardly bring myself to buying two. I said, I told you to buy two, and I'm the boss. And she said, you're not my boss. So I figured out that I'm not in charge most of the time. Most of the time, the one who wants to be in charge doesn't need to be in charge. I was sitting in a McDonald's in Newport, Arkansas. And they were, these little kids were having a birthday party, a bunch of little girls, I've told this before. And one of them needed to go to the restroom. And this, of course, when one of them needed to, all of them needed to. And so this one jumped up and said, I'll show you where it's at. And there was several, 6 or 8 little girls started following her, and she led all of them into the men's bathroom. And the mother was running, trying to catch up with them, get them before they went in there, and finally got them caught and got them turned around. And she was already overwhelmed with all these little girls. And as she walked by my table, I said, I have a question for you. And she looked at me, and I said, is that little girl a Baptist? And she said, yes. I said, I thought so. She's wanting to be in charge, and she's leading them the wrong direction. What really matters in the storms of life? I've used this several times, but I want to quote Sheila Walker here. And she said, life is what happens while making other plans. Life is going on. Storm? No storm. You don't need to wait for life. It's already started. Where do you get your advice about what to do next in the midst of a storm? In verses 9 through verse 11 in chapter 27, Paul advised them, and he had a word from God, and he advised them not to go to sea. And because of the economic situation, the owner of the ship said, no, we're going to sail. This cargo, it meant money for him. And so the centurion listened to him rather than to Paul. And in the 21st verse, Paul reminds them of that and said, you should have listened to me. He'd been in a shipwreck several times. Matter of fact, he had... I want you to see this. In 2 Corinthians, the 11th chapter, he had a lot of stuff under his belt. He had made lots of... The Lord had done lots of things in his life. And in the 11th chapter, look at verse 25. Matter of fact, let's back up just a little bit. When he is proving his apostleship, he says, are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prison more frequent, in deaths often. Of the Jews, five times received I 40 stripes, save one. Thrice was I beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Thrice I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day I've been in the deep. In journeys often, in pearls of water and pearls of robbers and pearls of mine own countrymen and pearls by the heathen and pearls in the city and pearls in the wilderness and pearls in the sea and pearls among false brethren. Then he talks about being hungry, weariness, what he'd gone through. He had a lot of experience under his belt. And when the storms come, we want to be able to talk to folks that have been there. There'll be more comfort in your own heart when you're going through a storm, when someone comes to comfort you that has gone through that same storm. A lady in our church at Tuckerman's name was Hazel Ray Warren. She was a saint. She was a church worker. Hazel had lost both her children. One as a senior in high school, the other a young mother with two children. Her son with a sickness, her daughter was killed by a drunk driver. I got a phone call that one of the folks that had been coming to our church, they weren't They weren't members. The grandma and grandpa was members, but these folks weren't. But there was they had a little boy, and I can't remember if he was 10 or 12 years old, but he had a horse. And he was a kid. And the horse showed out some way, reared up and fell over backwards, drove the saddle horn into his chest and killed him. And I drove to their house as quick as I got the message. They lived in a place called Campbell Station, just a few miles from Tuckerman. And when I drove up into their driveway, this mother and Hazel Warren was standing on the carport, and Hazel had her in her arms. There's no one that would have been able to minister to that mother more than Hazel could, because she'd lost both of her kids. She knew what it felt like. And she was ministering in the life. She had been in that storm, and she was ministering in the life of that young mother. In verse 20, Paul said, all hope's gone. Well, in Paul's day, when you can't see the sun or the stars, you can't navigate. There's going to be times in our life, perhaps, that we feel like all hope is gone. Well, we need to come to this place in the midst of the storm that when Jesus is all that we have, we discover that He's all that we need. He's all we need. And you may be going through a storm right now in your life. One thing that they did, I think, that might be applicable to us in the midst of a storm, do you need to lighten your ship? Verse 18, they began to throw the cargo overboard. In verse 38, they threw out the wheat. Reevaluate your priorities. In a storm, those things we once thought valuable suddenly seem worthless. Alfred Salser, in his book, observes it this way. For a long time, it had seemed to me that life was about to begin, real life. But there was always some obstacle in the way, something to be gotten through first, some unfinished business, time to still be served, a debt to be paid. Then life would begin. At last, it dawned on me that these obstacles were my life. I received a birthday card a few years back from a friend that said, the joy is in the journey. It's as we go. It's as we go. I want to leave you with a little thought on those things that are negotiable and non-negotiable. The car that you and I drive, the automobile that we drive, is going to rot to the ground. I've watched some car advertisements this past week. You run out of stuff to do. In 1960... we produced 1 million more automobiles than babies were born. And then it showed all these junkyards and crushing these cars into little cubicles the size of this pulpit. That automobile that we're driving is going to soon be absolutely worthless. The house that we live in, will one day be burned up. If it's not before the end of time, it will be at the end of time. It'll rot down, things will break. It won't be near as nice as it is now. And so let's look at some things that is negotiable and some things that are non-negotiable. Time is negotiable. Now, our wives believe that we should do it now. We husbands believe that we'll get it done. But time is negotiable. Location is negotiable. Where you're at, where you live. I would have never dreamed that I'd have lived any place other than Searcy County when I was growing up. Matter of fact, I didn't know there was any other place other than Searcy County. My dad used to try to describe to us what a ship was like that he was on in World War II, and he said it's like a little town. It's got stores. You can buy stuff. You can go get a haircut. You can you sleep in this area. You go like a restaurant. You go to this. And well, the only town that we knew anything about was Gilbert, and we'd say, is it like Gilbert? We could not get it in our mind what a ship was like. We'd never seen the ocean, never seen a ship. When Uncle Percy saw the ocean for the first time, he told his relatives he was disappointed. He said, some way I thought it'd be bigger than this. Location is negotiable. Retirement's negotiable. Some people live their entire lives focused on that end, and they never get to it. They just never get to it. My dad always looked forward to drawing Social Security, and he drew it 1 year. Retirement. A career is negotiable. You know, we think that we have to do this. God may have some other choice for us, some other reason. I knew I was called to preach, and I felt that I was called to the pastorate, but I never thought about being a full-time pastor. I always thought that we would work. Matter of fact, in my education, I was planning on being a school teacher until I substituted in a class for 6 weeks, and then I changed my major. I would never, ever do that. That's negotiable. Agenda is negotiable. Doesn't have to be our way. Doesn't have to be our agenda. We can actually change that. We can change what we thought that this is the way that it should be. That's cargo. That's cargo. It can all be thrown, when we're talking about life, it can all be thrown overboard. Doesn't have to be that way. I'll tell this story. I tell it and laugh because I'm telling it for Mike Disharoon's sake. But when we built the gym, it did not have a ceiling in it. And you deacons remember this. I didn't think we needed a ceiling. But some of the deacons felt like we needed a ceiling in the gym. And I didn't fight it, but I never would give in to it. Finally, they outruled me, I guess. I can't remember what happened. But anyway, Mike Disharoon was one of those that believed we needed a ceiling in the gym. I don't even know if he remembers this or not, We were standing on the upper floor out on that balcony part in front of the Sunday school classes, and they had finished the ceiling in the gym, and it looked fantastic. And Mike and I were standing there looking at it, and I said, didn't I have a good idea that I wanted this ceiling in this gym? Our agenda is negotiable. It's like cargo. There's some things that are non-negotiable. One of them is relationships. I tell you, we cannot afford to count any relationship as negotiable. Everyone, every relationship is important. Every one of those. Whether it's a child, an older person, all those relationships are non-negotiable. Family and friends, those are non-negotiable. We can't write folks off. We cannot burn that bridge. We have got to leave that open for our witness. We've got to leave that open for a possibility. God's calling on our life is non-negotiable. It's not a take it or leave it. When He puts His call on us, whatever that ministry may be, we follow that. Health is non-negotiable. These aspects of our health that we have no control over. Death is non-negotiable. It's appointed unto man once to die, and after that, the judgment. A couple, 3 years ago, I was visiting in the hospital in Fayetteville and getting ready to catch the elevator up to wherever I was going, and one of my old classmates stepped off the elevator I hadn't seen in probably 50 years. His name was Eddie Carter, and we visited. We just renewed our friendship there and talked, and there was a place to sit over here on the side, so we went over and sat down and just visited. And as we visited, he said, Lanny, I'd like for you to do my funeral. And I said, well, Ed, there's nothing to say that I'm going to outlive you. I said, we're the same age. I may, but you may outlive me by years. I said, death is no respecter of persons, and none of us know when that time will come. And he said, well, you probably will outlive me. And he said, if you do, he said, if you're still alive, I want you to do my funeral. I said, well, I'd be very honored to. 3 or 4 days ago, I got a telephone call. And I answered the phone, and the voice on the other end said, Lanny, this is Eddie Carter. And I said, well, Ed, good to hear from you. I said, and it's just automatic, right? I mean, I said, how's everything going? Well, he said, that's what I want to talk to you about. He said, you know, when you and I talked, I asked you to do my funeral. And I said, yeah, I remember that, and I'd be very honored to if I'm still alive. Well, he said, I think I'm going to need your services. He said they'd give him me 6 months. And he said, I just want to talk to you about it. And so we visited for probably an hour on the phone. And then I prayed for him on the phone, asking him about his relationship to Jesus. He assured me that he knew the Lord. We talked about his family and his grandkids. And the doctor don't know if he's going to live 6 months or 6 years, but it's still non-negotiable. Death is real. And so you and I, we should live our lives in our relationships as though this may be our last day, our last opportunity to say to the individual, I'm sorry, to renew that relationship that we know that we could make right if we wanted to. Make it non-negotiable in our life. Let's stand together. Tim, will you lead us in a word of prayer?